Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to another episode of Crosshairs Radios, episode 44, another edition of They Don't Do That in Europe, joined by Scott Diedenbach and David Palin, as always. And this is a cool one because we get to reminisce about the past week where we were actually able to see each other in real life instead of just over Skype. So, you know, we talk starting out with Trek, where I was able to hang out with Scott and the Women CX Project Trek CXC Cup. And then I was able to go see David down in Vegas, where he is the media liaison for Cross Vegas. So it was good hanging out with David, and then back to Scott's encampment up at, or whatever was left of it, as you'll hear about, at Jingle Cross in Iowa City. Great tour, the Itch Tour. It has now ended. I'm still going through everything, trying to get posts up every day about all the cool stuff I was able to compile. You know, and again, as I've said before, but I want to highlight it one more time because it's part of the sponsorship for this podcast and also for the whole trip I was able to do. But Orange Seal, amazing sponsorship by them. I love seeing on Twitter where you all are sharing your stories about how you like the Orange Seal products and also how you like that they are supporting what we're doing here. Easton Cycling. Go check out Easton Cycling. They got a whole line of wheels and components, cranks, bars, stems, everything that you need to get you moving through the cyclocross season and going faster. Also, check out that Easton Garneau team. They're good guys. I got some interviews with Michael Vandenham coming up later on CXairs.com. SDG Components. I know Tim Proctor on Twitter was talking about how because of their support for the Itch Tour, he went out and bought a saddle. Amazing. That's exactly what we want to see. And that helps companies like SDG, who are already huge supporters of cyclocross and cycling. It makes them want to do it more when they see that they are actually getting a return for their investment. I mean, they want to support us, they want to support what we do, but also to see that it pays off. You know, they are a business and you guys are supporting them and getting their products. That's awesome. Feedback Sports was all over this past week. They are supporting so many riders out there. The Omnium trainers are just the coolest things ever. If you look in the pits at Jingle Cross and I think others, they are using the Feedback Sports bike stands in the bike wash. So love having them on board. Verge Sport, I've talked about in the past. They are the preferred kit supplier for Crosshair Cycling, so love having their support. They are also a big sponsor of the Super 8 series, which I am the director of, so it's always good working with Verge Sports. Squid Bikes, you know them. Emily Kachorik, great week for her of racing. Also, Anthony Clark, it's always awesome to see those guys, see those rattle can bikes. Just amazing stuff what they're doing. And, you know, as I mentioned before, and we talk about it again because it's the Trek CXC Cup, just having Trek lend their support as well was great. Finally, if you haven't done so already, please go to wideanglepodium.com and consider becoming a member of that podcast network. That thing is really starting to take off, and I loved catching up with all of the folks who told me that they became members of the podcast network because of what they hear on Crosshairs Radio and the Meyerson Line and the Slow Ride Podcast, Honest Bicycle Program, The Consummate Athlete, and Kids Don't Follow. So thank you very much for your support in making the network a success. Finally, if you want to get in touch with me at CXairs on Instagram and Twitter, would love for you to follow along there. And if you want to shoot me an email, it is feedback@cxairs.com. And with that, we're going to get right into it. As always, with the They Don't Do That in Europe episodes, Scott Diedenbach is going to take over the controls, and he is going to do that right now. Take it away, Scott.
Okay, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of They Don't Do That in Europe. This is Scott Diedenbach with you, with me, as always, on my right, Mr. David Palin.
Good afternoon, everyone. Busy week.
What? What happened this week? Oh. Yeah. And on the left, CX Hairs himself, Mr. Bill Shiken. Bill, long time no see.
Someone's getting itchy.
The itch tour is complete, officially complete.
All that's left is the 700 gigabytes of stuff. I'm not sure what it is, but it's a lot of stuff.
I don't know how you get through all of that stuff that you need to go through.
Yeah.
Oh my God, you guys, what just a ridiculously awesome week it was for American cyclocross. I mean, here we are. We're going to do a whole show and not a whole show that includes two World Cups, and we're not even going to talk about anything in Europe.
I know.
That's crazy.
They didn't do that in Europe.
They didn't do this in Europe. So we're going to start out with the Trek CXC, of course. That's right at this point. When I think back, that seems like it was about 3 months ago. But it was a little over a week ago. Then we're going to cover Cross Vegas, of course. You guys are going to fill us in on that. That's the one I wasn't at. And then we're going to wrap it up with that little race called Jingle Cross, that little 3-day mud fest, incredible event called Jingle Cross. Yeah, and Bill, you're going to like in-depth, bring it all together with the Itch Tour, man.
Yeah, in-depth coverage of the bikini race, right?
I did not even see that. I didn't even know they had that.
Single speedo.
Yeah.
I didn't even know they had it. I was so...
Yeah.
I mean, when we get to what I had to go through that weekend, people will understand. But going back to when times were bright and sunny, Trek CXC, man, we talked about this the last time. We said it was kind of like a de facto World Cup. And Bill, do you think it kind of lived up to that, the de facto World Cup status?
Yeah, it was interesting how they had it set up. And, you know, normally... not always, but a lot of times in the U.S. when you have these double weekends, you'll have the C1 on Saturday and then the C2 on Sunday. The Trek CXC Cup promoters, being the smart people that they are, knew that they had all of these Europeans there and wanted to keep them there. So they switched that around and put the C2 on Saturday and the C1 on Sunday, so people didn't race to C1 and then take off for Vegas. So I think that really meant that we had a full weekend of top level racing. You know, we still had like Powers didn't race to C2, Wout didn't race to C2. We definitely had some people missing, but I thought, you know, overall those were two really fun competitive days of racing.
Absolutely, I would completely agree. It was a blast. But just to paint the picture a little bit. Let people know, you know, we're driving into town Friday, coming in for pre-ride, and about, I don't know, how long does it take to completely drench a cross course? About 30, 40 minutes of heavy rain?
Yeah, about that, probably.
Yeah, about 30, 40 minutes before pre-ride, boom, complete drenching of everything so that everyone goes out and pre-rides and everything is completely covered in mud. So that's how it started out. But then none of the races were muddy.
They were dusty.
So yeah, I kind of kept saying to people, you know, it's like, guys, this is not going to be what the course is like tomorrow. Pre-ride, I get wanting to pre-ride, but you're not going to see this after today. And we didn't at all. We saw dusty, dry courses, really hot weather, and pretty awesome racing from every angle that I can see. Across from our tent, I kind of like glimpsed out of the corner of my eye this little like flash of color, and I look over there, and there's Wout right across the road from our tent. Is Wout Van Aert getting ready for his race with all the Colnagos and everything? That was pretty cool.
I showed up on Thursday. And just sort of, you know, was meeting some folks at track, and then they were still working. So I just went and walked around the course. You know, it wasn't even really set up. And Sven and Sven are out there giving a clinic. You know, because that happens every time when you just show up to a random cyclocross race, and you know the greatest ever possibly, and his teammate are out there just with a, you know, just Trek employees giving a clinic.
Imparting your knowledge on the masses.
Yeah.
Right.
So that was pretty awesome.
And I thought it was really, it's really cool. Kind of, you know, like basically, you know, Sven was at all three of these races that we were at this week. I ran into him, and not physically ran into him, but saw him in the pits. He was right next to us for one race pitting, and, you know, right close by for most of the other ones. So you really got to kind of see what kind of, how he operates. And, you know, just the coolest guy ever. And I mean, I know you hear that a lot, but this is like what the kind of cool that he is. At one point they needed to run and get something out of their team tent from the pit. And Sven just goes, he just runs himself. Nobody else.
Yeah,
he goes and gets it himself.
He's not delegating anything.
No.
And the guy just needs to work. It seems like.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, he's just one of the guys there going to do whatever he has to do to get the job done. Just amazing. Yeah. Amazingly cool guy.
Before we recorded our podcast, and for those of you who haven't listened to that, you know, UTDDTIE loyalists who only listen to these shows, there is a
pod. Are there people that do that?
Oh, of course. You know, all of the Diedenbach and Palin groupies.
we have one. Sherry. We know you're listening, Sherry.
I'm just going to say Sherry Schwenkelorf. There she is.
No, that the Sven podcast went the day that we're recording this, which is Wednesday.
Excellent.
Wednesday? Yeah.
Wednesday. I have listened.
Yeah.
I have not yet. But
before we recorded that, he was washing bikes. So I had to wait for him to finish washing bikes, the team bikes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you saw him doing that kind of stuff all week long. I mean, just, you know, right in there, sleeves rolled up, doing whatever had to be done. So pretty cool. At one point, Corey and I were in the pit and he's like, hey, take my picture with Sven over my shoulder. So I took his picture with Sven in the next pit lane. And I think he posted it and put these damn photo bombers. So, very cool. All right. Well, let's talk about the results from the first day of Trek, if that's cool. Start with the women this week. In first place was Katie Compton. Second place, Ellen Noble. Third place, Amanda Miller. Fourth place, Ellen Van Loy. And fifth place, Courtney McFadden. Comments, questions, anything about that race?
I think it really was a harbinger of good things to come, seeing Katie Compton. You know, we had been optimistic that this was going to be a return to form for her this year. And we saw, like, you know, which we've talked about before, her doing these road races, these crits, really just crushing it in there, how she felt a lot better, how she came in at, like, super fit, you know, looked awesome, looked fast, was happy and excited to be there. And then she comes out and wins that race pretty much with ease.
By 40 seconds or something.
Yeah, and I think that was really nice to see, because it really seemed like she turned back the clock and looked like she did, you know, 3-4 years ago.
I mean, she had a couple of really strong things going for her going into this race. It's a home race for her there in Colorado. Plus, I mean, she's been on the Trek grounds a lot in development of the very bikes that she rides. But she has obviously really prepared for the season. Really, I spoke with her a bit at Vegas, and that she really feels that she's got the diet thing dialed in and is ready to go and go hard, and she's shown it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And then even in second place, once again, I think this was just almost a precursor for what we are going to see this season with Ellen Noble, who I think really had, you know, we could say last year was her coming out party. She was winning some C2s, you know, up there in some C1s. But this year on the national and world stage, really, really showing how strong she is.
Yeah, she's definitely all week long. She was playing with the big kids for sure. I mean, no question about it. She was right in the mix and trading punches with them. No problem. So, yeah, amazing stuff from her. So, okay. Anything else we want to mention about the women's race? It was great. Pretty calm, clean conditions, fast racing. I pitted for Courtney that race. She got fifth. So that was cool. And yeah. That was that. Let's move on to the men. For the men in the C2 at Trek CXC, first place was Steve. Am I pronouncing it? It's Chanel, right, Bill?
That is it, yeah.
Steve Chanel, that's what I thought. Jim Ehrnotz, Tone Ertz, Corne Van Kessel, and Quentin Hermans for fifth. French, Belgian, Dutch, Belgian.
Yeah, and that race was an interesting one because it looked like E-ticks on the road. You had a team, a dominant team who was controlling the whole race in Telenet Fidea, and they had four against one coming in to the last lap and somehow were not able to pull off the win.
Yeah, I mean, it was a Telenet Fidea train at the front of that race basically all day long.
It reminded me, I was standing there at one point early on when they were just controlling the front, and it reminded me of Breaking Away, when the Italians are there and they're racing yes, and they're just like chatting, you know, they're in this race and it's like they're on a group ride just chatting. So they're just flying by and you just hear Flemish, blah, 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 as they're going by, just having a conversation. I'm like, you guys are supposed to be racing, you know, but at the same time, they're stringing everybody out while they're doing this.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. They're going by the pit doing the same thing, chatting to the people, you know, to their mechanics and stuff in the pit. You're like, oh my God, they're not really even breathing hard yet.
Yeah.
Honorable mention, top North American, Tobin Ortenblad in ninth place, transported Tobin's wheels to him. So he got those safe and sound and pulls out a ninth place.
Go ahead.
Eighth.
Yep.
Well, yeah, you're right. You know what? The UCI thing is numbered wrong. The numbers aren't in order, huh? So anyways, either way, he was the top American finisher. So great job by him. Anyone else you guys want to mention or point out or say anything about?
Some Dillman kid did okay in that race too.
Drew Dillman. Yep. 13th. Yep. So not bad.
Tobin Ortenblad is going to be a good one to watch this year. I think there are a couple of stories on the men and women domestic side that we have folks in kind of similar situations. You have Rebecca Farringer, who I'm sure we'll talk about later, who still with the Amy D Foundation because she couldn't, you know, get a ride or more support from any other teams. And then you have Tobin Ortenblad, who this kid is going to be one of the best in the U.S. within not this year, definitely next year. And he also, you know, had to cobble together a program that he's just really just privateering for the year on his own and putting up some really nice early season results.
Yeah, it's awesome. I think what he's doing is so cool. I really like to mention it, and I really hope he gets all the support he needs, and I hope he's very successful with it. I certainly will help him anytime I can. Just best of luck for him. And I totally agree. He's gonna be a big time player in the elite men's for the U.S. No question about it. So
yeah, and you know, talking about you transporting Tobin's wheels for him, and then also, you know, working with Courtney as one of the mentors for the Women's CX project. You really are sort of running the home for wayward cyclocross racers and media personnel in that compound, because I also have to thank you and your team for letting me hang out with you all for the past week, and it was great to have as a home base.
You guys should have seen it. The first time I saw Bill for the whole of this week, I kind of stepped out of the front of our tent, and here he comes. He's got. You were carrying a bag in your arm, I think, and then you had a backpack on your back, and then you had a backpack on in reverse on your front.
Correct.
To like balance the load. And you looked like a Sherpa. So I said, do you want to leave some of that in the Sprinter van, Bill? So yeah, the Sprinter became Bill's camera compound for both races that we were at.
Yeah, and then you also, you know, are supporting the Australians too, who are awesome to have around.
Yep. So yeah, it was great, and great event there at Trek. So let's move on. The second day was the C1, the bigger race. I think you were exactly right, Bill, that they switched it around like this so that people would stay and not take off to Vegas. In the women's race, someone we haven't mentioned yet, in first place was Katie Antineau, second place Ellen Noble, third place Caroline Mani, fourth place Ellen Van Looy, fifth place Katie Compton. This was the race where Katie Compton broke a chain. Remember?
Yeah. Katie Compton with a mechanical. And then also, I mean, the story of the race, this was really Mani's race to lose. And she did just that. Leading, pretty good lead coming into the final half lap, I believe. There's this one grassy off camber. And, you know, just lost traction on it, went down. And that was it. Went from first in a, you know, good 5 second lead around and back to what, fourth?
So Caroline Mani comes into the pits after that crash, and it was something that I asked like other mechanics on both sides of me. I'm like, have you ever seen that before? And they all said no. But she comes rolling into the pits with her handlebars, you know, 99 times out of 100 with handlebars spin, they spin down, right?
Yeah.
You know, you hit a bump or something, you put force on the hoods in it, and it tilts the handlebars down. She comes in and her bars are spun up.
Huh. Like she's one of those dudes that flip them, you know, when they sort of ride around town.
Yeah, like the guys in Detroit do. Yeah. And she comes in, I mean, aggressively, way up. And she comes in and she's like, she screams at the top of the, she's like, I think I need a bike. And she's coming. And we're all like, have you ever seen that before? No, I've never seen that. What the hell happened? Oh. So, yeah, just funny. Always never, entertaining.
Never
person.
One to hold back. She had some choicer words at the finish line.
Yeah, I bet. Katie Compton dropped back farther than the fifth place she got when she broke her chain. She had to run a decent amount of the course. And when she came in, she was really huffing, breathing hard. You could hear her. I was a few stalls down from where Mark was, and I could still hear her like breathing when she came in. And then, of course, got her bike out back. I think I want to say she was like 11 or 12 when she re-entered, and then was able to pull back up to fifth to get fifth for the finish. So still a great effort by her. Just, you know, with that kind of distance that she had to run at, it was not going to happen that day. So. All right. Anything? Go ahead.
Yeah, no, just one sort of to put a button on that weekend. One thing that I will mention is that, you know, you had like this world-class field there and you had a good crowd. You know, it was not a huge crowd, but a nice size one. And I think that's a lot because of just where Waterloo, Wisconsin is. It's not really, you know, there's not a lot of density around
there's
there.
So around there. Yeah.
So everybody has to travel. But what I was going to say, what I was trying to get to is that everybody at that race was super nice. Like all the spectators, there's like, I'm not a big fan of heckling, but what was going on there was very friendly, very supportive. And I liked it. I thought it was a really, really nice vibe at that race.
Yeah. Was that your first time? I forget.
It was my first time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I always enjoy that race. I think the flyover is cool up on the hill. You know, and just being at Trek World Headquarters is kind of cool. And although there was a lot of construction going on in the parking lot, so things were shifted around. It was hard to kind of figure out how to get places a little bit, but that'll all be cleared up and back to its old self again soon. So yeah, I always liked this race and it was really fun. So,
you know, and they also, to their credit, of course, they have the funds to do it. And they also have the motivation to do it, you know, that they're the frame sponsor, frame supplier for Telenet Fidea, and that they had these other pro teams.
Make sure you get that right.
Over there as well, that they did they did what we want to see at every race, but it's not possible. They did a first class live stream of the race with, you know, a complete professional broadcast setup.
Including a screen in the pit. That was awesome.
Yeah.
That was very cool. I mean, sometimes, you know, there's a screen that you can kind of see from the pit so you can watch what's going on and keep track of people. But no, they had one like dedicated out in the pit. So that was kind of nice.
Yeah.
So men's race for the C1. First place was Wout Van Aert. Second place, Jim Arnouts. Third place, Quinten Hermans. Fourth place, Corne Van Kessel. Fifth place, Stephen Hyde, top American, gets the fifth place. Excellent showing by him that day. And of course, Wout Van Aert. I mean, what do you say about that effort, Bill?
He has a playbook. And if nobody is there to push him, if there's no Mathieu van der Poel there to, you know, take off like a rabbit from the gun, he's just going to follow that Sven playbook and just hang out for those first 2, 3, 4 laps, whatever it takes. And then, I mean, it's not slowly, it's extremely fast once he lays down the power, but eventually he just sort of rolls off the front and no one can stay with him. And we're going to be hearing that theme a lot as we move on through these races. And it's just insane to watch. I mean, the guy is so strong.
And of course, go ahead, David.
One of the things that I find very interesting is based on that analysis that you had on your show published earlier today with Sven on Wout. It's actually if there's more challenging people in the race, it gives perhaps lesser powered people a better chance at victory, where he starts really having to duke it out and burn those matches, and someone with a little more strategy can hold on and wait till later in the race.
The highlight of the Wout sightings, though, had to be the Damn Daniel video.
Oh, geez. That was so awesome.
All right, you got to tell the story, man.
Well, you know, having a preteen daughter, I am, you know, up on my memes and saw Wout, you know, taking off his silver shoes.
Silver. You couldn't even take pictures of them because they like would blind the lens.
Yeah, you could see yourself in these things if the light was right. Those were the, you know, his Bontrager race shoes, and then putting on these just like polished white, I don't even know what they were.
But they had like a 2-inch thick sole on them.
Yeah, they were some impressive white shoes. And Kennedy Adams was there. And I said, Kennedy, I will pay you if you go Damn Daniel him, which is a internet meme about this guy who keeps being impressed by his friend's white Vans. Like, Damn Daniel, the white Vans. So she was like, you don't need to pay me. I'll go do it right now. And we just walked over there. Strutted over there. She did. I dropped the amazing Damn Daniel on him. The best. Wout didn't know what the hell was going on. Had no idea. They're just sort of all staring at each other in the tent. Niels Albert is like backpedaling as fast as he can away from the whole situation, just trying to remove himself.
Yeah. And she goes right up there and goes, Damn Daniel.
So yeah, that was
it was great.
That was,
it
good
was
fun. Great.
All right. Well, that's the Trek CXC. Anything else we want to mention to wrap that up? Great event, amazing. I will definitely be looking forward to going back to that next year, as I was this year, and just a job well done.
Yeah, I agree. I'd love to go back as well, and I you know, even all the people at Trek were super friendly and helpful, and yeah, just with the whole Itch tour really helped me out a lot, you know, sold
what
shirts
a way to kick
and,
off the Itch tour, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you sell all the shirts at just at Trek? Close.
I sold close. Yeah, like 40.
Oh yeah. Sweet.
So my my Sherpa-ing was less after that.
But you still had to use the van.
Yeah.
All right.
I just wanted
to
hang out. Once we get to Iowa, I was parked like, you know, 5 cars away.
Dude, it was awesome. We love having you. You can come anytime, man. You passed out stickers to everybody and everything. So, all right. So, obviously, then during the week on Wednesday was Cross Vegas. So, Mr. David Palin, take it away.
Then there was Cross Vegas. It's like such a whirlwind. It's tough to even know where to begin. We get there Saturday and it's a big soccer field, and we just build, and now it's getting like more so and more so with each new year, how much time and how much effort goes into that. We have the new course this year. I had the distinct privilege of being the catcher of Katie Compton when she came over the line and escort her into the green room and for her flash interview and everything. And I don't know how many times she could say hard course, tough course, very challenging course, no place to catch your breath. I think that Brooke and his consultants and geniuses on course design, in particular, Jeff Lucido out of Texas, they really designed a great course, that uphill sand pit, quasi sand dune. They're calling it the cock-sided dune. It was as expected it would be, a game changer. It became a decisive point in the men's race for sure, in the women's race as well.
What is in that bowl? Are there fields at the bottom of the bowl normally?
Yeah, there's okay. Soccer fields at the top and soccer fields on the bottom.
Okay, so yeah, for people who, you know, don't really know the layout or have seen it in the past, there's sort of this upper level that's just completely flat. And that's where, what would you say, like 30% of the race used to be, 35% of the race used to be. And
almost, maybe less than that. It seemed to be more because of the first lap.
Right. There was a parade, almost a prologue lap. Yeah. But that was, and it was always dark, and it was always just sort of this lost section. So if you were a spectator, you know, you could watch on the big screen, but like everybody, if you were in the bowl in this place where you wanted to be, where all the excitement was, everybody just sort of, all the racers just sort of disappeared for about 3 or 4 minutes, and then they would come back. And,
yep, and they always had a flyover. The Shimano flyover
right.
was up there, which is now relocated down into the bowl.
Yeah, so what this did, it just moved everything into that bowl, and what it meant was the finishing stretch in that right turn, other than that, you're not looking at a lot of flat.
No.
There's pretty much elevation everywhere, you know, even the sand was an uphill sand section.
Yeah, and like, of course, the pits are flat, but other than that, even just beyond the racing lane on the pits, it either drops in or picks up. It's a very tight course now. Even to the point in the stairs, the last set of stairs, the stairs where Walt tripped the first lap, it was designed with the thought in mind of you had the stairs up the hill, a short flat, and then a climb again. And there was the challenge of you had to make a decision point there. Do you get back on your bike right at the bottom, or do you run across that flat and try to remount, or do you run all the way up the uphill? And that kind of thought process in the design of the course was really, really evident.
What I also liked is that for, you know, just before and after the race, when you want to go, and again, we've talked in the past about how cyclocross is such an accessible sport where you can go and see the guys and the women who are racing, you know, basically walk right up to where they're set up, and moving the team area into where the prologue used to be, I thought worked out really well too. And it gave it made it more inclusive into the race, where before it was almost set out in those back fields that if you weren't looking for it, you may not even know where everyone was.
Right. And that was, in the past, it was more to kind of give the racers and the teams some privacy back there. But now most of the bigger teams have either their own encampments and tents, or we bring in RVs so they can have their privacy, but they also have a tent set up for their warm-ups and their, you know, meet and greets on the field.
Yeah. And it's always, cool. It's always fun seeing the a little Schadenfreude fun, seeing the Europeans set up in their just one RV, you know, with an awning, and
it doesn't have their picture on the side of the RV. And,
they don't have six vehicles for each team and 10 yeah. bikes each. Yeah, they got.
And that was nice to see at Trek 2 with Cannondale set up. Cannondale basically had one 10x10 and a minivan, and that was it, and a couple work stands, because Katie Antoneau was there. Obviously, Stephen Hyde was there the second day. But it was just like, oh, you know, thank God, even they at least have limits at some point.
Right.
You know, because I'm sure all...
Trek wouldn't allow their stuff on the premises.
Yeah.
No, I don't think that. I'm sure it was because all their stuff was on the way to Vegas, but it was like, oh, yes, at least they have some kind of limits that they can cover.
Well, in the same way that we were all, you know, scratching our heads when we were like, huh, are Ellen and Jeremy Bowers not racing on Sunday? Because, you know, the whole Rafa Focus encampment just like up and left.
And we were, Bill and I were like, Bill said to me, what happened to, you know, Rafa Focus? We're like, huh, they're just gone. Everything gone.
Yeah. So I think
were working out of their sprinter, weren't they?
Well, yeah. So they moved, they had two sprint. It ends up, they had the espresso, the coffee sprinter there as well. So that became the race vehicle on Sunday.
Nice. Which is a cool thing. And that guy that drives that is a cool guy, man. He saw us kept running into us on the expressway as we were moving to different races, and ride by us and beep and wave. Yeah, that was great. So, all right. Well, let's keep on with Cross Vegas women's results.
Before you go there, Scott.
Yeah.
We have to talk about the USAC racing.
And I know where you're going, but go ahead.
You know where I'm going. The first two laps of USAC racing, some little kid by the name of Alex Morton tore it up. He led out the first two laps of racing. Scott Herman in his call was like amazed at the fact that this little kid, was he now racing age 15, 16?
I think 15.
Led the field out two laps. He ended up finishing sixth overall. Quite the race. Kudos to him. I had a chance to talk to Alex and Alex Sr. after the race. He was a little bit disappointed. He was hoping to be able to maintain his lead. But unbelievable.
Yeah, just
congratulations to the Mortons and to Alex, who is such a nice kid and deserves all the hard work he's putting into this sport. It's really great to see.
This is how nice of a kid Alex is. I pitted for him one of the races at Jingle Cross, and he won. His payout was like $20. So he gave me five. He gave me 25% of his winning. I was like, cool, dude. Thanks, man.
That's awesome.
And just that loving awesome. That he was giving it. But you know what? I'm still sticking with the reason why Alex is so fast is because I'm telling you, his mom motor pacing him on the ruckus. Just got to give more props to mom.
Yeah.
She heard that last week and was like, oh, my God, thank you so much. I'm finally getting some recognition. So there you go. Now she's
there you go.
Sandy gets even more recognition. So, all right, moving on. UCI, the women's finish was amazing sprint, kind of sprint finish, would you guys say?
Yeah, three up sprint finish.
Three up. First place was Sophie DeBoer. Second place, Katarina Nash. Third place, Katie Compton. Fourth place was Amanda Miller. Fifth place, Caroline Mani. So you guys were there. Kind of how did it unfold, if you can explain it?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, DeBoer, who was, this race started, you have to talk about Catherine Pendrell, lunatic racer out there leading the parade and off the front.
Excuse me, that's Cliff.
Oh, sorry, Cliff Women racer. is that what it's called, Cliff Women now, or?
You're correct.
There was a big presentation before the race. I don't know.
It being the media guy, I should know those things. We did have a media press release. She was out there, and then the big question was, is this race for her, or was that move to try to soften up the field for Katarina Nash, who has been on the podium every time she's been at that race, either winning or second place. She may have had one third, but so off she goes, and then the field fights back, and who's coming back to her but Katie Compton, Katarina Nash, and Sophie DeBoer. And then it's a three-up race for a good portion of the women's race until Sophie DeBoer got a little bit distanced in that sand pit that we're talking about as a real factor.
Yeah.
And in talking with Sophie afterwards, she was just thinking, I just need to get back to them. And all she was thinking was to fight back, to get back to where they were. She wasn't thinking about, I can win this, I have any chance at this, I just need to get back to them. She managed to bring it all back together. And then as they came up that final set of steps to that right-hand sprint finish, and I spoke with Katie Compton afterwards, and she said, I just waited too long. I thought that finishing straight would be longer. And I thought I could wait a little bit, but Sophie DeBoer just pushed and pushed and just took off on the other two.
Yeah. And you talk about that, you had that final, you basically had a staircase. You got to the top of that. You had maybe what, like four or five pedal strokes and then a right turn. And it was a pretty short finishing stretch after you made that right turn. So the positioning was you had to be first up the stairs.
Yeah, I
completely agree, and that's exactly what she did. She kind of raced to the stairs, got to the stairs first, and that was kind of it. Right?
Yep, by all means, yeah. And then They tried hard to catch her, but it just wasn't there. Yeah. Had it been longer, finishing straight, possibly. Had there been wind on the finishing straight, maybe. But she was not by far, but she was the strongest woman out there on that night.
Was this DeBoer's first World Cup win?
I believe
it
is.
I think it was, yes.
I mean, is it her first one or her second?
Oh, go to the interwebs and find it. But I think that it was indeed her first, if I remember correctly.
Okay. Well, while you guys are looking that up, let's talk about the fact 5 American women in the top 10.
Yeah. Yes. And it's awesome. I think that we also need to, just to balance that, to mention that half the field was American.
Yes. And, there was only about 8 European women that came over.
Yeah.
Something like that. It was a pretty small number.
2/3 of the field then were American.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
well, I mean, some Canadians thrown in there as well.
Yeah. And Villafane, Argentina. Yeah.
Yeah.
Eva Lechner.
To be perfectly honest, that was the one disappointing part of this World Cup run. It would have been nice to have a bigger women's field.
I agree. I think that's something that if World Cups continue to be held in the U.S., that should be a goal for future ones. How do we get more of the European women over here to be racing?
You look at two of the. Are you going to include Katarina Nash and Caroline Mani
as European
women?
Seven.
I mean, yeah, because they're. They live in the U.S., so it's not like they had any travel issues.
Yeah, yeah. And then, and Pendrell is from Canada, so.
Yeah. Talk about Pendrell for a second, too. Just how, and I wonder about if in fact you are correct, Scott, in that it wasn't really her race to win, but maybe working for her teammate, if that's even possible in cyclocross. She peaked a month ago. For the Olympics, that was like a 4-year, goal to peak for the Olympics. Came away with a bronze medal in the cross country mountain bike. How do you keep that going for another month to be able to perform in a World Cup cyclocross race? I get obviously she can, and they're at a different level than I ever was and ever will be. But I just find that amazing that they're able to. That these athletes are able to keep that form for that long.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But still, so a great event for the women overall. I thought that race was great. I watched the video of it and just awesome stuff. So David, anything
you
else
probably
to
saw,
add?
You probably saw more than David and I then did. I still haven't gone back and watched the whole race.
David, anything else to add behind the scenes wise of the women's race?
Oh, behind the scenes, the women's race. No, nothing else to add there.
All right.
No.
Well, we'll move on because we still got the men's race to cover. Men's race then kicks off. Let's just give the finish at top 5 right to start. First place was Wout Van Aert. Second place, Michael Van Thurnout. Third place, Lauren Sweek. Fourth place, Tone Aerts. Fifth place, Rob Peters. Wout Van Aert. So, David, you mentioned Wout when he tripped or crashed or whatever you want to call it. Did you guys notice that he bends down and picks up his watch?
No, that's amazing.
No, I didn't notice.
Crashes, bends down, and if you watch at the finish,
does he take his time to rewind it?
He bends down, picks up his watch, puts it in his jersey pocket. At the finish of the race, as he's crossing the line, if you watch it, you'll see him reach back in his pocket and pull out his watch
to
and check the time.
Well, probably just stop it. Those guys are amazing.
Yeah.
They are so data driven. I love watching that. Like those guys will be like covered in mud, sprinting for it, and like the second sprint is how fast they can get over to their left wrist to stop their watches. They all do it. I mean, it's just outstanding.
So I just thought that was hysterical, man, when we saw that.
Do you think their coach is like, if you don't give me that data,
it's it. Yeah.
It's going to be trouble.
Yeah.
It's going to be trouble. So Wout wins pretty after the crash, rides through a bunch of guys and wins pretty handedly. Is anybody going to touch him until?
I think that my conspiracy theory was that the crash was planned. and that just to make it a more interesting race, and that he sort of blew it because he probably should have taken more time looking at his watch, and he could have sat there for another 15 or 20 seconds and then really made it exciting.
I mean, I don't see anybody touching him until Vanderhaar and Vanderpool get back. Do you?
Yeah. No, I think Vanderhaar is going to be the interesting one this year. That'll be the one to keep our eye on.
I agree.
Yeah, I think having having Sven's ear and his knowledge, that's going to be the secret sauce for Vanderhaar. Yeah. Between.
Didn't you like that whole part about, you know, just with talking to Sven, how he's talking about how, you know, Lars has never had a cyclocross family before, and that that's kind of what he's been missing. Yeah, that's it's going to be interesting. It's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, I've always been a Vanderhaar fan. Back in the days, he was dubbed Lars Vanderholeshot by one of our compatriots. I think it'll be very, very interesting to see what he does going forward, because he can now play those cards that he has got the strength and speed to play those cards that Sven used to play or was trying to play in the last couple of years when racing against Wout and Matthew Vanderpool and the likes.
Okay, let's move on. I want to talk about...
Wow,
I think you exasperated Scott.
I'm sorry
there, Scott, man.
The whole time you were...
You were taking a nap. What were you doing, washing bikes?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking about something else, and I'm like, just popped in my head.
I was waiting for you to transition. I'm like, where's Scott?
Wow.
Oh, do you want to transition, Bill?
No. Your show.
So what did you say, David? Could you repeat that? No, I'm kidding.
I was just wondering if everyone was going to go hard at Trek or not.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Let's talk about Jeremy Powers.
Okay.
How did Jeremy, we get there?
Jeremy Powers gets 18th place. And I think if you had told Jeremy Powers at the beginning of this week that was going to be his highest finish, he probably would have been sad. Would you guys agree?
Yeah. And he probably is.
Wow.
Now, of course,
we have to go to the Wayback Machine, though, and really sort of talk of the genesis of Powers's problems with this week.
As far as crashing at Trek?
Yeah.
So, didn't he break his toe going over a barrier and then had to fight? No.
Wrong guy.
No, that was somebody else.
It wasn't it wasn't a break. It was a fracture, but it wasn't a fracture. It was only a crack.
It was a crack. I did see that.
So Powers, of course, has a pretty serious stumble, I guess it was, at Trek, and then crashed a couple times, I believe, in that race. Once when he was practicing and once during the race,
I think it was the practice lap that really messed him up. And I think that he did a real number on his ribs. And, you know, if you've ever had a rib injury, it's not fun to A, breathe, B, walk, try running around carrying your bike, and then also riding. So I honestly believe that he was in a ton of pain from that. He did also tell me that he was sick too. I mean, it was just like this, you know, for this guy who these were his A+ races. This was, you know, usually you have your season goals near the end of the season. His season goals were last week, and you know,
pretty
just
disappointing,
just hugely disappointing, and bad luck. And you know, I mean, he's Jeremy Powers. He's a trooper. He's getting through it, and he'll come back, and he'll be good again. But you know, you gotta feel bad for the guy. I mean, this is what he was really just training for since the end of last season was for Jingle Cross and for Cross Vegas.
And you know, while he did, I think you're right. I think he did. It was the practice crash that really messed him up, because he never looked good in the race at Trek. And then he crashed
early in that too, right?
Yeah. And when he came in the pits, his bike was messed up. Tom was over working on it for a long time, trying to get the rear derailleur shifting right again. So, probably a sign that at least his bike hit hard also the second time too.
Yeah.
So, just a bad set of circumstances for him, but he does get 18th, at Cross Vegas, highest American finisher there. So, you know, I guess it's just, you know, yeah. we'll see what the rest of the season brings for Jeremy Powers.
Well, let's talk about the start of that race. And, you know, it's almost like a Cannondale Cyclocross World.com legacy move. The bat out of hell at the start of Cross Vegas, you know, following in the footsteps of Ryan Trabone. Here comes Steven Hyde just on the gas, taking advantage of this front row start and just crushing around the first turn, getting the hole shot, and then basically saying, I'm going all out until I can go no more, which unfortunately was, you know, a couple laps down the road.
And then he ended up 31st. Yeah. So, yeah.
But put on a great show there for the first half of the race.
Sure. Absolutely. Like,
it turned
out
to be important, too, that first lap as they merge from that start straight onto the course. It was a huge pileup.
Yeah. I posted a gallery of Bruce Buckley photos today, and one of them is a guy on the other side of the barriers, a spectator, basically handing Kerry Werner's bike back to him after it had flown over the barriers.
Oh, that's kind of like football, right? If it comes into the stand, just
right,
to
he
give
can keep
it, back.
It. Yeah, or well,
it's
you
not
know.
Like baseball. Baseball, you get to keep it.
Well, it depends if it's a home team or not.
Oh, okay.
Oh my. All right. Well, anything else we want to talk about Cross Vegas right now? I'm sure other things we saw and did will pop into our heads as we do the show throughout the rest of the season. But anything else jumping out at you guys right now, or are we ready to move on to?
I think there's one other woman we need to talk about. Sorry about that, Scott, for stepping on you and waking you up again.
Yeah, yeah.
A woman, young woman by the name of Sana Kant. Who?
Oh, good point.
Kind of a non-issue out there.
Yeah, I mean, got a ninth place, so decent points there. But yeah, really a non-factor for both World Cups.
Yeah,
yeah.
So yeah, we'll see. I don't know if it's just, you know, here's welcome to traveling, you know, and racing cross, or if it was, you know, again with Sophie DeBoer, the heat was just really too intense, or what was going on. But yeah, not the showing that we're used to seeing from her for sure.
Yep. Yeah. You know, and then I think the other exciting part was the or probably the most exciting sprint that we saw from the men's field at Cross Vegas was the Baobank. I'm not sure who it was who was doing it. Not Baobank, Kralin. Pushing Wout van Aert in the wheelchair through the airport to get to his gate. In time with the air boot on the foot, and Renat from Sporza, you know, tweeting out that Wout has a fractured big toe, which just
it was just cracked.
Just cracked.
Well, that just started this whole huge uproar on oh my God, is he going to be able to race? He's got a broken foot, you know. And I the people giving Wout a hard time about him trying to clarify, English is not his first language. So you're getting into some nuance here. We don't really know what happened to his toe, but he tried to downplay the injury by saying, of course, it's not fractured, it's just cracked. Which, of course, everybody jumped on and said, well, that's what a fracture is. But, you know, it's not English. That's not his first language. So that didn't really help clarify things, but it definitely led to some intrigue going in to Jingle Cross, whether A, he would race, and B, he'd be okay.
Although, Bill, I said to you, you think he's going to race? And you're like, this was like Friday morning. You're like, he's going to race.
Yeah.
Bill knew the whole time.
Well, yeah, and then you see him out there.
Well, Bill was talking to him at the airport. Yeah, and he pushed aside one of those red caps and grabbed his hat. He's like, "Oh, let me help you to the airport, man."
Oh, all right. Well, let's wrap up Cross Vegas and move on to Jingle Cross, guys. Okay, so Bill, when did you arrive for Jingle Cross? Thursday, Friday?
I got to Iowa. Friday. Friday.
Coming back to your old stomping grounds?
Yeah. Yeah, that was sort of crazy. It was sort of interesting because, other than driving through there once around like the late 90s, really hadn't been back to Iowa City since 1981. So,
man.
That was, it's changed some.
All right. So here's my story. I gotta tell this from the beginning, Bill, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So we roll in like any team that's well prepared to take on a World Cup weekend, right? We roll in the first possible day you can. We had a pro spot in the pro lot. We roll in. We set up our two custom, very expensive 10x10 tents. We had the Sprinter there. We usually carry three types of stakes to secure our tents, like tent stakes if we're in grass, spikes if we're in gravel, and then drywall screws if you're in asphalt or concrete or something like that. You can actually attach them right to the asphalt. So that was done. The tent is just rock solid. Lower the tent down so that no wind can get under it, or less wind can get under it. And we're all set. We take off. We're going to go to dinner and get a good night's sleep. Sounds like a great plan, right?
I like it.
Do you see any flaws in that plan?
I do.
I do. It was the tornado that was about
to
strike.
That was what I was going
to
say.
So we're at dinner. I get a text. Rebecca Gross, who's a great friend of our team, says, "Hey,
Was it like that? Hey,
your team tents have blown in the wind." And we're like, "I'm like, what? We had just ordered." So I like jump up, tell those guys, just get my stuff to go and bring it back to the hotel. I got to go check this out. I get to the grounds on Thursday, and it was like a bomb went off. For people that don't know, it wasn't a tornado officially, but it was, I think, like tornado force winds came through the parking lot and basically shredded 50% of the team tents that were there, including ours. So I get there, and the legs of the tent, the reason I went into such description about the securing of the legs is because they were still in the ground.
You did everything you were supposed to.
Still attached to the ground. The wind ripped the frame apart, man. It was like, you've got to be kidding me. And the other weird thing is our tent was, say, like 40 yards to the south. Justin Lindeen was right next to us, right? Directly next to us. His tent was like ripped up too, but like 30 yards to the north, the complete opposite direction. So you're just like, how did this even happen, man? When I was leaving there after cleaning this all up, there was, you know, there's the grassy area where the team tents normally are on the other side of the buildings. There were tents that had blown from that grassy area across the road into the woods on the other side of the street.
Yeah, it's just...
It was just unbelievable, man. Everybody was just in shock.
I was thinking about the first year of Madison. It was a little bit like that, but not even close to that bad. But definitely, you know, wind taking out a ton of tents. But yeah, That's just crazy. And y'all got a lot of rain too, right? That night?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think the low point for me was, so I had to clean all this up, right? I had to get it out of there. You couldn't just leave it, you know, you couldn't just leave these tents everywhere. So you have this massive amount, you know, there's a lot of metal in those things. They fold up very, very neat and tidy, right? A 10x10 frame. But when it can't fold up, it's a lot of stuff. Right?
Right.
It's a lot of twisted metal that you cannot fold up very well now. So I think the low point for me, after I jammed all that in my van is now completely filled. I got up, I just went back and went to sleep. I got up, I'm up at like 5:30 Friday morning. The van is still filled with twisted metal pieces of frame and awning. And it's 5:30 in the morning. It is pouring rain. And I got to figure out how to get this stuff out of the team van so that we can even get to the race, because we couldn't all fit in the van now. So here I am like, you've got to be kidding. And of course it's just downpour. I mean, it's just as heavy a rain as you can imagine. And I'm like, oh my God. Luckily the manager at the hotel we were at was a very cool guy. He comes out in his shirt and tie, opens up the dumpster and helps me load this stuff into their dumpster and says, hey, man, this is going to work good because these are going to get emptied in about an hour anyway. So we were able to make it work, but at the time I wasn't sure. And oh my God. So then I hit up Walmart, bought two like $90 10x10s, and that's basically was our team set up for the weekend. So what a way to start.
Yeah.
The racing. Then on top of that, Friday became the Mud Fest, man. Oh, you were there for that, right, Bill?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I mean, these guys are pitting on the half lap. That is the most challenging race conditions I've ever been in the pit, except with the close second being Jingle Cross last year. So, I mean, it was just constant running mud everywhere, of course. Very, very demanding conditions after an incredibly stressful day just to get to that point. It was just when Friday was over, it was just like this. I could just like feel this like relief come all over my body, man, because it was just the craziest day ever. But still cool racing. Everyone, the spectators always like the mud. A lot of the racers always like the mud.
Well, the racers who were able to keep their rear derailleurs intact.
Yeah, there was a few broken rear derailleurs. But for the pit crews, I just want to give a shout out to those guys and ladies. That was just amazing job by anyone that was pitting in that race that day. So props.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And it was, that was an interesting day too. Cause you know, we have those night races, which I guess we're going to probably talk about next. And, that is a unique event. Having that Friday night, especially having it a UCI race. I mean, you know, we've seen night races before, but and UCI night races. But this, I don't know. There was something just, it was like a party up on the hill. And then I think the thing that struck me the most, one, it was all that mud. And then two, there is a descent off of Mount Crumpet that is not lit. And they're very just different. Like, they're just bombing down there. Pretty much blind, which in the men's race caught out Curtis White because he went down in the first lap because he was basically just gunning it down this hill blind.
I also like how on that the night race at Jingle Cross always on that back off camber that most people run, the way the lights light up those trees back there, the big Musco Stadium lights like light up those trees back there, really gives it a cool kind of eerie feeling because you can see the racers running across that off camber, and you got this, it's kind of almost like this backlight off these trees coming on them. Very, very cool scene. One of my favorite scenes of the year, every year. So,
yeah. All right. You know, even backing up from that, you know, once I showed up on Friday and it was still light out, and they had, even though they changed the course around each day, and on Friday night they weren't using the front half of Mount Crumpet, which is just basically a large hill. But when you see it, it's got a nice pitch to it. It's got really, you know, steep elevation change. They had all of the, a course set up with all of the course banners, and you just walk in and you see that and you see how it sort of, snakes its way down that hill. And you're like, okay, this looks like what I see in Belgium for a finger quote, real World Cup.
Absolutely. I think that's a very impressive thing when you see that S snake part of the course coming down that hill. And that's one of the first things you see if you come from that side, and you just think it. I agree. You immediately think, wow, that looks like a European cross World Cup course right there. So yeah, very cool. Women's results. First place was Helen Wyman. Second place was Ellie Anderson. Third place, Emma White. Fourth place, a name we don't get to mention often, but just one of the nicest women out there, Sunny Gilbert in fourth place. And fifth place, Ruby West from Canada. Comments about any of that? Those are probably, you know, five really strong riders in that race.
Sunny Gilbert, I think, just starting to race for Van Dessel, right? This was her first weekend.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, racing for Van Dessel. It was an interesting move by the Whites, both who, you know, were looking to have good performances in the World Cup, also racing the day before. Emma putting in a good performance, so, you know, making that pay off for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's kind of one of those things you always have to balance at Jingle Cross is, do you race the first, second day? Do you race the second, third day? Do you race all 3 days? What do? You just race the World Cup now. So, it's always interesting to see what people decide to do on that weekend. So,
yeah. And you got and you have a C2 race. You have Helen Wyman winning the race. Helen Wyman is someone who's won, you know, World Cup races, who's always up there. So I think, you know, we'll see this on the men's side as well, is that you looked at that C2, and I think if you were planning it, you would say, okay, this is a race that everybody who is looking to do well in the World Cup probably is going to not race.
Yeah, or they're just getting in from Vegas, you know.
Yeah, getting in from Vegas, racing at night, and then having to turn around and race, you know, during the day at a World Cup the next day just seems like a tough road to hoe, but it turns out that some of those top riders still in there.
Yeah, still in there.
Helen didn't come from Vegas.
Did she come from Belgium?
No, she came from...
She came from the East Coast, that's right.
Wasn't she at Trek? I think she was at Trek and then went from Trek down to Iowa.
Yeah, true. Good catch, David.
Hey, Dave, she still had a race the next day.
No question about it. And I'm a huge fan of Helen's. One of our first guests, Caitlin Anthony being the first, but one of the first guests we had on the Bike Shop show, and someone I had the distinct privilege to sit down and speak with. Not a big fan of Vegas. I get it. It's a lot of time zones. It's a lot. Yeah. It's a very different thing from her strengths. And this race plays into her strengths.
You know, but in a
very tough course.
Let's not discount that Highway 1 can get a little backed up, and the trip from her hotel to the venue may have taken 10 minutes.
There
so
you go.
She had some travel.
There you go.
She had some travel concerns.
She rides it.
All right, let's move on. We got to talk about the men. In first place, Marcel Meissen. Second place, Curtis White. Third place, Danny Summerhill. Fourth place, Jonathan Page. Fifth place, Travis Livermon. Great seeing JP out there. I was cheering for him as he was coming around. Great to see him up there again. And Curtis White having a great day. Summerhill, a really good ride. So lots of Americans all up in there. Meissen, of course, the German, getting the win, though. So
yeah, and that's one of the names that I was talking about. You know, a guy who probably... looking to do well in the World Cups, you know, towing the line at the C2 the night before was an interesting choice, but hey, for him, paid off.
Absolutely. So, all right, well, let's move on to Saturday. This is the World Cup day, correct?
Yes, it
was. It's all a blur. So the World Cup comes along, some course changes, and Bill, what did you think of the World Cup race overall as in general?
Well, I think first off, you know, just a couple differences between Vegas and Iowa, you know, both, I think, good courses, obviously different courses. In Vegas, it is more of a European schedule. I mean, you do have those USEC races, you do have the Wheeler and Dealer races, but after that, that's it. So the course isn't beat up. Iowa, you come and you have what, like 60 races over the course of the weekend?
Yeah, something crazy like that. Yeah.
And the weather added this year in Iowa certainly beat the heck out of that course.
Yeah. Yeah, so that definitely led to some different conditions, you know, just with it being torn up and making it, I think, a little more challenging. They did change the course around, as I said, that front side of Mount Crumpet wasn't used on Friday, so that was fresh, but that was just tough. So I think that it was a really hard course, and then on top of that, it was a hot day, and I think that led to it being an even harder course.
Yeah, and then there was some areas where, like we said, they did, of course, change the course some, but they also widened some of the course, which led to a grass section now back in play that was much more rideable and didn't force riders into this peanut butter mud. Because like you said, Bill, it was starting to dry. It was hot. windy still.
Mud in the microwave, according to Tom Mason.
Yeah, exactly. So it didn't force riders into that mud at every single turn, and allowed them to kind of be a little bit more of a race, in my opinion. I thought Saturday there was just enough mud for what I like to see in a race. Friday, in my opinion, is too much. It's over the top. It's just craziness, and I don't like that racing as much. It's just like a nice, decent amount of mud where it's a factor, but it's not just this thing that kind of overpowers everything. So I really liked the racing on Saturday.
Was there any discussion that either of you heard? Was that a decision by UCI or a decision by Jingle Cross? In particular, the stretch by the pits.
Yeah, I was just going to talk about that. Yeah, go ahead.
It had this beautiful green carpet stretch for the pros to the left side of it and a big mud puddle to the right side.
I was a little disappointed in them making that change because before it was a strategic decision where switching a bike was almost faster. Going through the pit, grabbing a new bike would have been faster, and that whole math was taken out of it. You know, that equation didn't exist anymore because you could just fly down the grass.
Yeah, true. I think, you know, some people were still like forced into the mud because of just, you know, there was too many bikes in a small area. So I think it did still come into play a little bit. I do kind of agree with you, Bill. It did make it less of a strategic decision. I don't know, though. It would be very interesting to see what would have happened if they would have been forced into that mud every single lap, because that was one of the worst places as far as mud. I mean, we're talking probably 3-4 inches deep of really thick mud. We would have seen some really crazy stuff happen. And then you could argue, well, you know, is our broken derailleurs and stuff, you know, that's as much of a wild card as your decision to make the pit choice. So I don't know. I think it could go either way. There's arguments for both ways. And I think we still got to see great race as it played out like it was. So,
yeah, I think the one thing that I wish they would have done, just so people who were watching on TV could have seen it, there was that great off camber section behind the pits that I think on TV you just basically saw a side view of. But seeing
them like running.
Yeah. But if you saw the front view of that, it looked like it looked like a mini Namur. You know, you had two or three different levels. You know, I had that little clip up on my Instagram feed of in the Sunday race of Tobin, you know, basically going high and running past like four guys, you know, and getting back into line.
Absolutely.
So that was one of those really neat views that I don't think you got to see. And there were a couple others, you know, I think the back hill of Mount Crumpet. I'm not sure had a ton of coverage on. So there was probably even more difficult features in climbing than what showed up on the broadcast.
One of the interesting things I thought about that off camber was it changed so much over the course of the day. At certain points, the top line was faster to run. I think at certain points, the lower line was faster to run. By the next day, the guys were riding it. You know, it had changed so much. So just a cool thing to have in the race. Talk about that's, throwing in a skill section. It was awesome.
And that's the great, that means that you have a successful feature. It was similar to the sand in Vegas. You had only the top guys, only the best of the best who could ride all the way through the sand at Vegas. It was only a handful. And you had the same thing, you know, on that Sunday race in Iowa, where only the best of the best could ride that whole section. And who's to say it wasn't faster one way or the other? But that's what I like. That's what I like, where you have these features that, yes, if you have extraordinary skill, you're going to be able to complete it. You know, I don't like the features that it's just like nobody can do this. You know, let's make it so that's a separating factor between the greats and everyone else.
I agree. All right, so let's talk about results of the World Cup. Start with the women. In first place was Katie Compton. Second place, Caroline Mani. Third place, Caitlin Antineau. Fourth place, Katarina Nash. And fifth place, Ellen Noble. I mean, Katie Compton basically just crushing souls, laying down what we might see more of her to come, and taking over the overall lead for the World Cup, right, after this race. And I think we're going to see good things from Katie Compton this year, you guys.
I think so. I think, interestingly, though, she has said that she's not targeting the World Cup this year. And I don't think we'll see her traveling to Europe nearly as much. I think that she's really looking for World Championships this year.
Yeah. So, as you know, unlike in the past where she was based out of her home in Colorado, she is moving in with mom and dad in Delaware and really going to be concentrating on those East Coast and Midwest races. And yeah, as David said, not making as many trips over to Europe. But for me, seeing her win that race was, I think, one of the best moments of the whole week. Just to, you know, sort of, it's pretty public what she's been going through for the last year, and to see her overcome that and have a dominating win was just really amazing. And that was pretty cool to be able to witness.
Yep, I agree. Is there any other women that you guys want to talk about that we saw? Rebecca Ferringer with a strong showing at Trek, strong showing at Jingle, got 11th that day. We're going to be seeing more and more of her too. You know, like we talked about with Ellen Noble, I think she's really going to be up there, you know, with Ellen as some of the younger women. Although, you know, Rebecca Ferringer is 28, so she's a little bit older than Ellen Noble. But yeah, we're going to see good stuff from her for sure. Sonny Kant getting 13th.
Yeah, 64th. To 37th. That is Ferringer's jump in the UCI rankings. She went from gonna have to fight really hard to get a World Cup spot to an automatic bid in 1 week.
And I don't know if you guys know this, but she was the quote unquote random drug test both at Cross Vegas and at Jingle Cross.
Yeah, so the random raised eyebrows in, holy cow, she's gotten fast. But yeah, I think she really has just figured it out. I think that's the main thing, that she definitely
is somebody who's comfortable with her speed and where she is.
Yeah, and she's a super powerful rider, and I think she's finally putting together all the pieces on the technical parts. And it's awesome. I look forward to seeing her continue to climb up the charts.
Yeah, completely agree. So, all right, moving on to men's results. Same day in the World Cup. First place was Wout Van Aert. Second place, Kevin Powels. Third place, Lauren Sweek. Fourth place, Jim Arnouts. Fifth place, Gianni, Bill's favorite rider.
Vermeers.
Gianni Vermeers.
And his new team. Hey, speaking of his new team, Bart Wellens wasn't there, was he?
He was not.
Yeah. What the hell?
I would have thought he would have been
racing. Team manager
doesn't
make it over? He's the manager of that team.
We were talking about Jeremy Powers. Powers was like, what, 43rd. So, like we've mentioned, very much hurting. Had to be, you know, had to be hurting. The top American was...
I didn't even finish on the lead lap, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, something's obviously wrong with him at that point. So top American finisher was 10th place, Stephen Hyde. That was a pretty impressive show. Tons of fans going wild for Stephen Hyde. Did you see that, Bill?
Yeah, it was a great ride by Hyde, you know, and as he points out, he's not concerned about being top American. He's concerned about being top in the world. So cool to see from him. And he set himself up well going forward, now sitting 15th in the world.
Yeah, so that was really cool to see Stephen Hyde do that well. And like I said, great event overall. I can't say enough good things. I thought this was one of the best races I've ever seen, or as far as the event as a whole. The other thing that's always so nice about Jingle Cross is they have great food.
Yeah.
I swear, it's like, I know when I go to Jingle Cross, you don't have to worry as much about lunch because they've got so many good selections. So that's just one of the things I want to throw in there, because I always appreciate that about Jingle Cross. So.
Yeah, I think the one thing to mention with the men's race is that, you know, we did have the toe issue, the fracture, broken, cracked big toe, and how that was going to play into the race. And, you know, the first couple laps of the race, you had... Lauren Swick out there on a big attack and out front, and Van Aert just sort of hanging back there, and, you know, didn't know if this was normal Van Aert strategy or if maybe that toe was affecting him and maybe this wasn't going to be the day. And he didn't look great, you know, but maybe also we were putting that on him because we knew that he was injured. So he, you know, was just playing a little possum, and in Van Aert form, a couple laps go by and all of a sudden he decides, okay, time to race, and then just sort of rode away from everyone.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right, let's move on to anything else about the World Cup at Jingle Cross that anybody wants to mention.
No, I think that going back to Sané Khan, I know that she was not happy with the course at the end, and maybe it was just frustration from her results, or that she really just didn't like the setup of the course.
Didn't she call it a mountain bikers course or something?
Yeah, that is what I heard, that she was pissed off.
Seemed
about
to
it
me
being
like
a
all
bikers
the
bikers course.
Seemed awful like a European course to me.
Yeah.
It seemed to me like all those cross bikes on the course did just fine.
Yeah.
So,
but we'll see. We'll see how she does. You know, yeah. We'll see. I don't want to give her too hard of a time. I think she just had a bad week, you know, maybe similar to what Powers was going through.
Sure. Or could it just be, you know, it's a new travel thing for her? That's a big deal.
It's also the heat, it's the travel, it's everything. It's early in the season, so I think time will tell how things shake out for her.
So, well, we move on to Sunday. So, let me get your guys' opinion on this. What is your opinion on having the third day? Because after the World Cup, it was, I think, a lot of the racers, a lot of the fans, obviously, by the very low attendance, just were tired.
I can see from a racer perspective, especially the guys who, you know, came over from Europe. This is their job. They want to make sure that they have the points to be placed well in races coming up. They're going to go at it, and they're going to put in the time. They're going to do the race. And it was more of a vocation for them. As far as the spectators are concerned, you're exactly right, Scott. I thought there was a huge hangover, you know, both literally and figuratively from the day before in the World Cup. And it was,
I mean, there was like 100 people there.
It was the least amount of people I've ever seen at a C1 race. If that weekend had only been a C1 race, like everywhere else you go, we're going to KMC, or we're going to Cincinnati, or we're going, you know, where it's a huge deal that these guys are all going to be there. And then we're just talking about domestic pros and everybody comes out for it. Here it was like, I was there Friday night. I saw the World Cup. Why bother with this? So
right.
I think
did they charge admission on Sunday too? I know they did on Saturday.
No, it was free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No one there.
I don't know if I've seen a race with that few of people.
I mean, it was wonderful to cover. I got to every spot I wanted to go.
You could go everywhere. Yeah. Well, the women came out and raced. This was a cool race. First place was Katarina Nash. Second place, Ellen Noble. Third place, Eva Lechner. Fourth place was Caroline Mani. Fifth place, Rebecca Ferringer. Pretty much Nash was pretty dominant the whole race, don't you guys think?
Yeah, you know, and it goes back to my whole mountain biking thing and how do they do this? But I think I say this every year, how they keep their able to keep their form through cyclocross. But I think that at this point, much like Matthew Vanderpoel said at the end of last cross season, that there is no off time anymore. You just race all year long. I guess that's what we are seeing.
Yeah. So pretty straightforward. A lot less mud on Sunday. Things had dried out quite a bit. Still some, but a lot less. So legitimate cyclocross features. Again, like we were talking about, that off camber behind the pits was still there and changing from race to race. So
how was the heat on Sunday?
It wasn't as bad.
Yeah.
Nowhere near as bad as Saturday. It was kind of a little, was it a little chilly? I don't even remember.
Yeah.
It was nice. It was really nice. It was a little cooler and really nice. And just looking at the UCI rankings, just because I know that he was in this race as well. How do you think that Rob Peters overall was satisfied? Do you think he was satisfied with his trip?
I mean, what did he get? I know he got on that Sunday, he was top 10, right? Yeah. What else did he do?
It, pretty much the same throughout the week, right? And you're like, okay. And he raced everything.
Wow, Peters, I didn't realize that.
I believe raced everything, all right? So, and just like, you know, top 10-ish results, he was 40th in the world. He's now 23rd.
Wow.
So just, yeah, you know, even though he wasn't on the podium, even though he wasn't getting these top results, just by putting in the work, showing up and getting, you know, top 10, top 15s, he made a huge jump in the world standings.
We haven't even hardly mentioned him today. And like you said, it was just the culmination of all that stuff put together with decent finishes, nothing spectacular. And that's what you can do just by working that hard. That's really impressive, actually.
He did take fifth at in Vegas, and he won a race in was it China?
Oh yeah, well that's yes, and that's but that was I think what I was thinking about was
the
even
Clinton
China
Trophy.
that he traveled to China, traveled to the US. He's basically done everything just to bump up. And I think for these guys too, what's important for them is, you know, you look at the top 10 and it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 Belgians. He's not going to make a world's team. He's not going to make if he's not in that top 50, he's definitely not making a World Cup selection. So it's so much more competitive for these guys to be up there. And I think that's why he was doing every race he possibly could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point. That's really interesting and very cool. It's cool to see him doing that. That's cool. Okay, so moving on, want to talk about the men's results then for that race that Rob Peters finished 7th in. First place was David Vanderpool. Oh my goodness, it's so awesome.
A little love for the brother.
Yes. Second place, Gianni Vermeersch. Third place, Dieter Zwick. Fourth place, Lauren Zwick. Fifth place, Vincent. Say it, Bill.
Bastens.
Bastens, yes. All right, guys. Well, that, I think, wraps it up. What a crazy amount of results. Well, Bill, did you want to talk about the U.S. Pro Series?
No.
Okay, we won't. I don't either, so that's great.
I believe Hyde is the first and for the men, and I don't know.
And somebody else is second. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, guys, what a great crazy week, Bill. The Itch Tour was a success. Are we going to see more of that kind of thing?
I hope so. It was really cool. And again, you know, not to use this time where we're all together, but I am going to, you know, Orange Seal was awesome. They stepped up. They were the title sponsor for this. Also, Easton Cycling, SDG Components, Feedback Sports, Verge Sports, Squid Bikes, and, you know, also a special shout out to Trek Bikes for being awesome during that race. And it was cool. I just love that these companies were able to support what we do. And it just wasn't me. You know, I was by using their support, I was able to hire photographers for each of these races. So I think that on cxairs.com, there's some really cool footage, both, you know, via video and photography, and then also the podcast that came out of this. So yeah, I think it was a successful week, and hopefully we can do it again.
Yeah, and we had a blast, Bill. I mean, being around with Amanda and Dave Oshiko from SDG, from the SDG team. Some people will know what the Dave Oshiko means. From the SDG team, who are, of course, supported by us, and having them there, you know, who sponsored yet, and then you there. And it was just what a blast. I mean, it's just one of the weeks that you'll just never forget, I think, in when you think back on everybody thinks back on their involvement in cyclocross for 2016. And I think this is going to be the highlight and be hard to beat. I don't see another spot on the calendar where we're going to have this much taking place in this short a time. So
no, it was awesome. And I'm also, you know, it made it that much more fun to me to have you guys at Trek and also at Iowa. And then I also, you know, you know, not as much fun hanging out with David, but, you know, it was good to see him as well in Vegas.
Oh, come on. I gave you a beer.
No, that was in all honesty, it was awesome seeing David, especially hanging out with him at the rider event. And then also during the race, you know, for as much pressure as he is under during that day, he is always able to keep it light, which I appreciate. So that was a good time.
You know, it's really cool at that event. I spoke with Sven and I said, because we have, for those that don't know, we have a table. And Scott, this year there were maybe 12 pros sitting at that table doing autographs.
I saw that. I saw that.
Greet and everything. And Sherry was there, of course. and I ran into Bill. We started chatting and I saw Sven. I said, you know, Sven, we'd love to have you come up and sit at the table with the pros. He said, I'm not a pro any longer. I'm retired. And I said, yes, that's true. But there's a lot of people that would really love the opportunity to talk to you. And he said, it's not about me. It's about the guys. And all of his team was up there. I'm sure he has impressed the importance of the relationship with the fans, especially in the U.S., on his team. And it is great.
That's the one thing that team's going to get from him that, you know, and as we talked about in the earlier episode with him, is that it still frustrates him that these other European pros will not, you know, have not embraced the importance of North America to cyclocross. But I think he definitely has. And I think you're right. He is definitely making sure that his team appreciates it as well.
So coming up, we've got this weekend is the KMC Cross Fest. I don't think you said you weren't going to that one, Bill. David, I don't think you're going to that. I'm going to that. We are leaving tomorrow. It seems like I've been home for 10 minutes, man. and we are leaving tomorrow. We're going to be there. And then the following weekend is, of course, Bill.
Yeah.
Charm City.
It is.
So first time as a C1, Charm City. We will be at that rate. We're staying out on the East Coast for the week. We're heading down to Baltimore after the KMC race and hanging out there for a week and be hitting up Charm City. So
we're gonna have to do like a you and like the Australian podcast here in the basement. We'll get David to call in.
Yeah, we should do that. That would be great.
I'm down.
So we'll have that. We'll be down there. We'll be doing that. That's coming up on the show. And then, of course, you know, soon the European stuff will be rolling hot and heavier. And we'll be covering all that, too. What's the new name of the B post, Bill?
Dave.
What'd you say?
Dave.
Okay, we're going to try to say that as little as possible this season. but when it starts, we'll be covering it there, too. So, guys, thanks for being with me again, and we will see you next time on They Don't Do That in Europe. David, where can people get a hold of you?
On the interwebs, Mr. David Pound.
All right, and Bill?
CXHairs.com, also at CXHairs on Twitter, at CXHairs on Instagram. Check out that Instagram feed. Have a ton of videos up there. And that's, that's where you can find me.
And a shout out to all the people that came up to Bill and I, got their picture taken with us because they listened to the show, told us that they love the show. Dude, are you guys ready for this? Somebody asked me for an autograph.
Nice.
What? Nice. Insane. We love it. Keep it coming. If you see it at a race, don't hesitate.
Almost what I love, like it was almost begrudgingly that people would do this, but everybody, I had at least, and I'm not exaggerating, at least 20 people tell me that they had joined the wide angle podium. So
yes,
that is awesome. Yeah. I joined the wide angle podium. They were like, almost like I'm supposed to apologize for it, but it's an awesome thing. And thank you for doing that. And if you haven't done so, you too should go to wideanglepodium.com and become a member of the podcast network so we can buy David a new microphone.
I certainly appreciate it.
You sound much better today, though. You sound much better today. You don't sound like you're in the shop bathroom today.
I am not in the shop bathroom today.
All right, guys. And as always, you can get a hold of me at CyclocrossNet on Twitter is usually the best way. And we will see you guys again soon after this next couple weeks with another They Don't Do That in Europe. Guys, take it easy.
Later.
We'll clean some bikes with you, Scotty D.
I'm on my way.